Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is 3.5 hours of talk, dialogue, interviews on the streets, and your contributions on issues of civil rights in Santa Cruz and actually all around the town. And hey, we go beyond the town. In fact, when I checked in at my usual time at the 7-Eleven at Chestnut and Laurel, which I often do before my show, looking for folks who might want to go on the air or have stories to tell, some of the folks I'd hoped would show up didn't show up, but I ran into a man I didn't expect, and I'd like to introduce him. He's back in town after a kind of a hiatus of last time I saw him around here was a year ago when he was protesting in front of the Sentinel. Why don't you sign in there, guest?
Hi, my name is David Nathaniel Nepente.
Hi, David.
I'm with Activate America Publishing Company, and it's located on the front page of the Civil Rights Network of MSN Network.
Uh-huh. And again, what will be the website for that?
Basically, you just throw all Activate America into your search engines, and you'll come up with about 4 or 5 different displays at this point.
Uh-huh. Now, I guess I first ran into you when you noticed and became concerned with how the Sentinel was covering or not covering problems in Santa Cruz with the police, between police and musicians and so forth, last summer.
Actually, the first time, that was probably about 4 or 5 months after I actually met you. I came up from San Diego. I was doing a homeless research report down there in regards to the fact that they were literally using the eminent domain laws to wipe out the homeless resources center. With it kind of like here in Santa Cruz, how your Coral Street is your major thrust for resources for homelessness here in Santa Cruz, being a microscopic society. On the more macro level within San Diego, there was an area there that they decided they were going to no longer utilize the Jack Murphy Stadium, that they were going to literally wipe out homeless resources in order to use eminent domain laws to reconstruct a new stadium for the San Diego Chargers, who heard of Padres actually that year. And so nonetheless, I had to spend 5 days in the San Diego County Jail there for walking my dog, canine Lulabelle, on the beach without a leash. And during my 5-day intern there, I came in contact with several different interesting factors, particularly within our civil rights factor of that your average American citizen for a pound of weed, depending on where they're located at, can receive up to 20 years in Oklahoma. But what I discovered in San Diego County was that individuals coming over the border who were Mexican citizens were receiving 1 day per pound. In other words, let's say you're a Mexican citizen coming over the border.
And that's per pound of contraband or per pound of body fat?
We're talking per pound of contrabanded illegal substance that would the average American citizen, particularly in Oklahoma, would receive up to 20 years per pound.
We're talking marijuana or cocaine?
We're talking pot. The crystal meth, I'm not really sure how that intensity is. My main concern was the fact that I felt our 13th, our equal rights amendments were being violated, in the sense that they were frying American citizens up to 20 years for a pound of weed, where the deterrent for the actual Mexican citizen was one day per pound. I mean, it doesn't sound like much of a deterrent to me to come over the border with 90 pounds and do 90 days and get back out and do it again.
Weren't the weren't Mexicans who were doing this deported after they were jailed? Or wasn't it? I mean, I don't know about the situation you've been talking about, but it seemed to me one of the rationales for this might be you don't want to spend jail resources on, quote, illegal immigrants when you can just dump them back on the other side of the border, right?
I presume that. I mean, I thought we had plenty of resources to spend 20 years in jail, you know, for American citizens. We certainly have plenty of money for American citizens to criminalize them. I think we could expand. I mean, if we're going to press, you know, individuals, why not just, you know, expand beyond our own means or capabilities of oppressing American citizens? I mean, there's plenty of other countries out there that we can ship, you know, illegal immigrants in, and we could start jailhousing them for equal.
I hate to see anybody jailed for marijuana, frankly. I'd like to see the Drug Enforcement Administration should be jailed, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think we should all get together and utilize our civil rights to, you know, exercise citizen's arrest. I think maybe we should, you know, pull an old Indian-style fashion, let's surround the justice hall and we'll force them to come out and we'll write the ordinances against them.
There you go. You were in Santa Cruz, as I said, when I saw you. I guess you said you were in town a while before you saw me, but then you got involved and began a protest in front of the Sentinel.
Well, that was shortly, the protest in front of the Sentinel was probably about a month and a half after I met you over the 4th of July over that homeless, you had some flyers going up there in regards to a homeless rally on the 4th of July. I went down there to see basically what was going on. Because my interest in coming to Santa Cruz was that I met a gentleman down there in San Diego, which got me on the San Diego sidecar track there, but I met a gentleman there named Wolf, who had literally recommended I should come to Santa Cruz, check it out, said that I would get plenty of, you know, assistance within the homeless resources aspect, as well as he actually informed me about you at that time. He said you had a little pilot radio station that, you know, would probably be a good thing for me to get on.
And actually, I'm one of more than 30 people who has a program on the...
No, I remember him specifically, his specific description. He was familiar with me, familiar with you, and his specific direction, you know, his specific... description was you in general, and I didn't really run across you until that 4th of July protest where I met you there at the clock tower and we kind of did our march down the street.
No, I remember that there was, that was the time we were supporting the folks going to Sacramento who were, I was actually before the 4th of July. There was a walk to Sacramento, the Right to Sleep walk. Our legislators are sleepwalking and our city council people are sleepwalking, and that they criminalize poor people for essentially essential functions that they need to perform outdoors because they have no affordable housing. And in some cases, people choose to be in alternate circumstances, but often it is an economic necessity. And people are criminalized for doing things that, of course, aren't criminal. That's the problem in Santa Cruz. That's the problem all over the state. That's the problem all over the country. And I guess you're back again, and you said you had some interesting experiences with police here in the last week.
Well, I've had actually some interesting experiences within the police since the beginning of what you might quote the Iraqi war. Pardon it, personally, I call it the Greenway Conspiracy. Nevertheless, I actually started protesting the war, or actually I was protesting the peace protests, beginning with the 41st Avenue protest out there in front of the... recruitment station out there.
You were protesting the protesters?
Oh, absolutely. I went there under the guise that I was going to a peace protest. I wasn't really versed into the internal guts of what a protest, you know, involved. What I realized that day was that there, you know, a protest is basically an organizer, an individual, and that individual is going to, you know, act as the mouthpiece for the protest itself, and there may be, as I found within that case, sub-agendas at large.
Should I call you David or should I call you Nate?
I prefer to go by Nate myself. It's more common.
So, Nate, what was the nature? You felt the protesters, you're talking the folks in front of the recruiting center, right?
Well, I'm specifically talking about the woman who I'm not quite sure her name, but she's an ex-Air Force individual, and she basically kind of the way the organization works is it's very well structured. They work a recruitment process. When they see new faces there at the protest, she'll be the first one to kind of interview you, present the happy, hi, how are you doing, and who are you, and how do you feel about the military? And I tried to express to her that, you know, basically, I was born military. My family's been military since 1776, which would make us pretty well damn involved with every military engagement that's happened ever since then.
So, Nate, did you support the Bush's war in
this matter? I support our troops entirely. I believe that, you know, when you start to stipulate things that she stated, that, you know, our boys are butchers, my concern was that, you know, our boys are doing their job. If they were to actually, you know, disagree with Mr. Bush at that point and decide to get out there on the line during the course of war and say, hey, you know, I'm changing my mind here, I'm not going to shoot
some
the gun,
yeah,
they could actually take the gun to the back of the head during war.
Uh-huh.
They're following their orders. If my main
well,
emphasis was this.
Is that a good thing?
That's,
I mean,
the political bottom line is that the soldiers are not the ones who determine to go to war or to fire the gun. It is the president. You know, any crimes or humanity
so
crimes.
So would you have said the same thing about the German soldiers in World War II, that they actually had to follow their Führer because they would have been shot if they hadn't, and therefore we should support, you know, those German soldiers if you're, say, a German citizen? Would you?
I think that's a completely separate issue. You're talking about a foreign nation. I'm talking about our family, our friends, our community.
Yeah, but suppose you lived in Germany.
Basically, the military is the only social option that we've been given, you know, for the last 100 years in order to, you know, get people out of agricultural communities that are actually poverty-stricken with,
Nate,
you know,
Nate,
option
minute.
Out.
Nate, what about the button, you've seen it, I'm sure, that says, support our boys, bring them home?
That one was my whole platform. I support our boys, bring them home. I wasn't involved, you know, my intention here was not to promote the war itself. As I stated to her, I support our boys, I want them home. As far as Mr. President Bush Jr., it's another bushwhacking campaign trail. It's what I called Project I Don't Eat Broccoli Number 2 that never got followed through when they started the original process back in his father's administration.
Nate, let me get back to what's been happening to you in terms of your interactions with the police and downtown, because you mentioned that you seem to have been incurring some attention from the men and women in blue.
Well, I've been incurring attention with the men and women in blue for the past basically 2.5 years since I came to Santa Cruz. I tend to go out and look for what I call discriminatory business practices and policies being administered particularly by the merchants on the mall, who I have watched time and time again. Originally, I thought it was your police force just being, you know, complete pricks and dicks. But then as I looked into it, after I pointed my finger at them originally, what I came to find out was they were basically responding to the calls that they were receiving, because that was the policy. And once they got there on the site, it was actually the merchants that were pushing into the fact that they were signing the actual ticket itself and pushing the officer into the arrest factor. So that it wasn't so much the officer arresting the musicians or the artists or the individuals out there congregating and exercising their First Amendment rights on the mall. It was actually the merchants who were signing it, doing what their citizens' right is to basically enforce and, you know, arrest another individual. Within the past couple weeks here in Santa Cruz, what's happened is those businesses that I've identified over the years, I've basically brought them all together and was putting on, getting prepared to actually set up demonstration tables in front of their stores and basically stating to the community within a 51-inch by 8-foot marker from the curb that I've worked out with 3 different police forces as being my safety guidelines that I walk within and picket when I'm personally demonstrating against a discriminatory business, and stating to the community, boycott this business. This business practices discriminatory business policy practices that basically it's a hate crime. And a hate crime is, in fact, a crime. It's a felony federal crime to commit hate crimes, and that these businesses are committing hate crimes against the community by violating your civil rights to speak, congregate, and assemble out there on that mall without the jurisdiction of the hospitality committee.
Yes, inhospitable hospitality is called the hosts, or the pests, as some of us call them. well, what businesses were particularly of concern to you?
The ones that I have found to date to be most discriminatory, particularly in my case where I spent over $850 on Logos Bookstore, where it began originally, the little coffee lady who works there in front of Logos Bookstore has always been not too thrilled to see me when I return to Santa Cruz and do my little undercover stunts. as well as across the street there, the Acapulco Lounge. She had a song and dance that particularly left her very unhappy after Officer Wendy and several other officers and I worked out the parameters of where I would conduct the protest and demonstration there, informing the community to boycott those business establishments for the discriminatory business practices. Jackson's Shoes.
Wait, sorry, go ahead.
And
why Jackson's Shoes?
Miss Jackson's Shoes. Well, we'll be going to court on June the 15th, and I'll allow you to kind of determine those factors for yourself. In fact, I'd love to invite the media to attend these court dates because I tell you, they're turning into a rather dramatical event themselves.
What are you accusing Jackson's Shoes? Are they accusing you? Who's on trial on the 15th?
Well, Miss Jackson's Shoes tends to believe that I'm the one on trial. However, you will see something occur within these trials that will definitely
what
point
are they
the finger.
With?
They're charging me with this. What is it? Disrupting the peace or.
Disturbing the peace?
Disturbing the
415?
Peace. Okay, yes, the 415. Uh-huh. They're hitting me with the 415. However, when I place Miss Jackson on the testimony, I'm going to basically get her statement on record so that there's no factor of perjury involved at any later dates when I file civil litigation against her for violating my First Amendment rights to demonstrate, to assemble, to speak, and to inform the community that she is, in fact, conducting a discriminatory business and perpetuating and hate crimes within the community.
Now, how did she specifically discriminate against you, or how did she attempt to restrict your First Amendment?
Because anyone that attempts to speak in front of her business establishment or strum a guitar or sit out there and string beads or perform some artistic expression in any manner or sit out there, should you sit out there when three people deep and drink a coffee and have a morning discussion over the newspaper, she's going to call the Santa Cruz Police Department. The Santa Cruz Police Department's going to come in number and force. The hospitality committees, they're going to sit there with their little grins and smirks on their faces singing, yeah, 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 the old yeah, yeah song. I'm behind the merchants because the merchants are paying me. And nonetheless, my point being that I believe that these court trials are absolutely essential because it allows the merchants to go on record with their reasons why they're calling the police department and allows me to utilize their testimony against them at later dates in civil cases.
So can you tell me the particular incident that caused this 415 citation against you? And this was, I take it, a citizen's arrest by, what, Candy Jackson, perhaps? Or are we talking about your mom? Candy's the younger woman with the short hair.
No, Candy, originally the first 415 with Miss Jackson, Candy kind of gave me the old siding with mom effect. But I think the second time, this most recent one last week, I think she realized that she was up against a little more than they had anticipated. Because what I tend to do is I'll go into the business establishments dressed, you might say, middle class kind of, white collar type of upper scale. I'm presenting myself as the publisher of Activate America Publishing Company. However, I'll come back at later dates and I'll dress kind of bummed out, like I've been wearing my same clothes for 3 days, and then I'm smelling kind of dirty, and that, you know, I'm looking kind of homeless and raggedy. I'm a long-haired freaky kind of people, and I type of see what, you know, how you respond to me in the different presentations that I give to you, because I know that when I come through the door wearing my, you know, clean look, and that I'm presenting myself as, you know, an established business professional, that you're going to do the song and dance, and the customer is always going to be right, particularly when I'm standing there in your presence under those conditions. But when I come through that door under any other condition, particularly when I'm wearing the homeless, you know, suit there,
right,
or the homeless man in disguise, I get the whole different song and dance. We're looking down the nose at me, and God forbid that I should even, you know, want quality service, let alone a respectful, you know, type of service policy that would be equal to me, the homeless person, as it would be to me, the publisher, wearing a three-piece suit.
Well, what actually, first of all, when did this last incident happen with Jackson that caused the ticket?
That'd be I served 14 days in the county jail, and
you served 14 days. So were you convicted, or did you?
Well, I was convicted. I'm the most recent one. I convicted because I decided that after I spoke with an attorney that I can still pull the civil litigation, even though I pled no contest.
I see. Well, actually, that's true, but it'd be better if you were found not guilty. But
Well, their statements, the police reports, were vindictive and
before we get to that, let's find out what it was. Tell us the actual incident itself. You know, what happened that day that had you taken into custody?
Well, as I stated, the officers have, over the years, come to realize that when I do go out on the block and I'm looking for these discriminatory business practices, it's almost like I'm pulling a fire alarm, because for some reason there's something within these greeting cards, the Goddess Elite greeting cards, the world's most famous greeting cards. It's almost like voodoo, because these things are like 25,000 published deep now. The energy of kinetic love and people that have, you know,
Nate,
taken
let's
themselves
focus
home.
Again. What exactly did you do in front of a business?
I stated to the community to boycott this business, that it's a discriminatory business. It practices discriminatory business policies, particularly in regards to the homeless, the musicians, and the artists out there on Pacific
Avenue.
Did you
do this verbally or with a flyer or
I did this verbally at an elevated pitch that tends to go at different levels, because if the bus is coming down the street, I'm going to have to speak to you a little louder, and if the car is coming down the street, I'm going to have to speak to you a little louder, and if there's no one there on the street, maybe we can go down to about this decimal.
Would it be fair to say you were shouting, or were you speaking loudly?
I never shout, but the worst thing that happens is I do tend to throw in a few licks of the start, what I call my battle cry blues rendition of the national anthem, simply because this thing has put me in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Well, maybe you should do a little bit of that for us here on the air, although let me modulate the sound level so you don't blast away our equipment. Go ahead. Would you be willing to do that?
Yeah, basically what's developed with Battle Cry Blues rendition is I originally beat this thing in 1996 when I was protesting housing issues in Detroit, and the Detroit Press and the Detroit News had a whale of a tale of explaining how this individual was singing the national anthem and basically breaking the world records for capturing the most American flags in seven different cities while climbing the flagpoles upwards to 70 feet tall, scaling them barehanded, and singing the national anthem in broad daylight. Basically, those businesses and public buildings that were being identified were businesses like the businesses on Pacific Avenue that I targeted by asking them how did they feel in regards to housing, and were they willing to support, you know, housing programs, grassroots programs within the community, when they identified themselves showing no interest for the individuals within the community other than extorting the economic factors from the community. I did attack their premises by capturing their flag from, you know, individuals that I felt had no pride within the flag, let alone their community. Nonetheless,
so you went and took their flags?
Well, I consider it a fair capture. I mean, if you tell me that you're not interested in uplifting your fellow, you know, American citizen, then basically I consider that treason.
The Jackson Shoes store doesn't have a flag, right? I mean, so you were simply making a speech in front of the store. How far away from the door were you?
As I stated, because of the prior incidents within the media whitewash protest at Santa Cruz Central, that was a 7-day vigil there, I always go 51 inches from within the curb now, so that there's no... We can't say that I'm obstructing this traffic.
51 inches from the curb would be about 4 feet.
Actually, it gives me 4 foot, and basically what that works out to is a table.
You stay 4 feet from the curb.
Basically, what I do is I set a table up, because what they don't realize is I'm really marking that 51 inches, because I may stand there the first day just to...
We've had some problems ourselves tabling nearby, actually right next to Jackson Shoes at the Pacific Trading Company in the last 3 days. We've been repeatedly harassed by...
Now, that Pacific Trading Company, that was one of the major ones that I identified right from the beginning, because you had police officers down there siding with Pacific Trading Company, particularly sergeants on there, that were telling Pacific Trading Company things that they weren't telling the other citizen on the other side of the fence, that they should be videotaping these incidents. Personally, I think the fun game is going to be when we start videotaping the merchants violating your civil rights down there, and I'm really getting into that process. I just started purchasing video surveillance equipment to begin doing that.
So actually we're talking here with Nate, who has been apparently in jail for, if I understand this properly, you were arrested for disturbing the peace in front of Jackson Shoes a couple weeks
ago. No, I was arrested for stating to the public you should boycott these discriminatory businesses on Pacific
Avenue.
They
called it disturbing the peace.
Well, they can, you know, lark it up and harp it up.
I hear you. No, I'm just saying, technically, on the books, the charge that they charge you with disturbing the peace, you pled guilty, or you pled not, no contest to that. You served 14 days in Santa Cruz County Jail?
Yes, I decided I didn't want to wait another 15 days to actually hear the trial, particularly when I have other trials going on.
In other words, one of the reasons that you pled no contest was, were you being held on bail there?
Yeah, you could call it bail. I personally thought it was more a ransom. I mean, you
right.
know, they're letting
much,
people out for, you know, everything from carrying concealed weapons to everything else. And I've had a $2,500 bail cash.
And what were there other charges or just disturbing the peace?
Well, 7 counts of disturbing the peace was enough
seven
to keep them
counts?
Occupied.
No.
Well, that was one day, Saturday.
All right, so this was for seven separate incidents? Or
in one day, yes. You have seven separate businesses on Pacific Avenue.
So 7 businesses charge you with disturbing the peace?
Yes.
And what was the date of this incident?
I'm not really prepared at this moment to just, like, throw out dates like that. I'd have to think back to it somewhere around, I'd say, just before the weekend of Memorial Day there, on the 25th, something.
And so when is your court date is June 15th. What's your court time? Do you remember?
No, I can get back with you at a later date.
June 15th, right?
June 15th, sometime on that day or morning.
Don't forget to be there if you want to, you know.
No, I'm looking forward to this, and actually the individual, I finally found a half-decent public defender, half worth his salt there.
Who is that?
I don't have his. Yeah, I wasn't really prepared for this interview this
morning. Actually did. We did swoop you off the street, so this is sort of one of those spontaneous interviews, my regular.
We can refine things a little bit better in the future.
My planned guest, as I said, didn't show up, so Nate here generously agreed to fill in. Nate, I appreciate the kind of the preliminary update, and I'd be happy to have you on again when we get some of these details ironed out, because I think people are going to be interested, and I think some people might be interested in attending this trial. June 15th isn't too far away. It's it can't be June 15th. June 15th is a Sunday. That's a week from today, so you couldn't have a trial on the 15th. You're probably thinking of another day.
Really? I'm going to have to really check with my dates.
You better check with your dates.
Check with
and
my
give
dates.
Give me a date, too, while you're at it, but not that kind of a
in
date.
In between time, you can check back with me on Saturdays at 1 o'clock when I'm going to be doing a staging block parties on Clay Street. It's a one-block stretch off of Broadway in between behind the 7-Eleven there on Ocean Street. I've got some neighbors there. We're going to begin staging a protest there because I've been ordinanced by the judge within the county to I have to stay 100 yards in the middle of the block. I'm allowed to go on the end of the block. I'm allowed to go on the other end of the block.
Which
but
block
I'm allowed
is
to
this?
This is Clay Street, the block behind 7-Eleven on Ocean Avenue there in Broadway.
Uh-huh.
And so
have you been banned from Pacific, too? Or?
I've been banned completely from Pacific, from the tower to the where it turns into the King goes down there.
Huh. And that was based on the Jackson incident? Or
well, that was based on your 7 discriminatory businesses exercising their totalitarian rights to, you know, make a decision for the rest of the businesses on the block who have been more than happy with me going in there spending my money.
Let's say a year ago when you said you had problems with Logos, Acapulco, and...
No, actually, at that time, they weren't really... They didn't really see what it was that I was doing to the degree that I've come to, you know, do it.
What
at this
7
point.
Businesses are you talking about, Nate? Do you know the names of those businesses?
As I stated, that would be Logos Bookstore. That would be the Acapulco across the street. It would be the coffee cart that's there in front of Logos Bookstore. Miss Jackson's shoe store. That Pacific Trading Company is one of the worst ones. I'd like to run both of them out of there real quick. And down the block a little bit further, you got the Coney Island there. And across the street from the Coney Island, there's another store, another little shop there on the corner. And that's it. And the little, what is it, the surf shop or skate shop, whatever it is there.
O'Neill's, perhaps, down across from the Cinema 9. That's one of the surf shops. And there's a couple of surf shops downtown. You know, what we can do is, you know, we can have you firm up some of these details and invite you back again. I want to thank you, Nate, for being with us on the air. And
I appreciate the pleasure of you doing this, and I'd love to have you help me kind of refine things a little bit more. I'm not experienced, you know, with this public relations policy of, you know, speaking to the public on these matters.
You or anyone listening can come to our HUF meetings, that's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, every Wednesday at 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square Restaurant, which is at 1107 Ocean. I'll give you a card with that information on it, Nate. I want to thank you again, and I want to remind our listeners that you can call in if you have any questions for either me or Nate at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. I'm going to take a little musical break, and then we're going to continue with the Bathrob Spears broadcast.
Can we could break into that musical break with just a little opening with the Battle Cry Blues rendition?
Sure, do a little Battle Cry Blues if you'd like there, Nate.
Whoa, see. Can you see generals gathered in the masses, just like witches at black masses
in the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed in the twilight's last gleaming. Now in darkness world stops turning, ashes where the body's burning.
I'll end that with there. I'm kind of working on the mix back
there. Yeah, it's got some nice lyrics. Thanks, Nate, and thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Ken. I appreciate it.
All righty, man. That, of course, was Just Kidding, and my favorite album, whose name I never remember, but it's still one of my favorites when it plays well. We're trying to get a second copy of it. Moral Compass and Bonus Tracks. Good album. Good work, Skidmark. Good work, Phil. Good work, Spirit. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I'm Robert Norris. You're welcome to give a call at 427-3772. And you can also reach me on the internet, sort of. I'm checking it kind of sporadically at rnorse@hotmail.com. rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, @hotmail.com. Again, the main number to call is 427-3772. You can also catch me at the, there's a caller right now. Voicemail is 1-877-427-4523, but let's see what the caller has to say. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hi, Robert. This is John. This is, I guess you remember me.
I think I do.
Yeah.
Aren't you that fellow that the police love to harass for holding up a sign?
Well, on occasion.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to bring up is the fact that I want to remind people that every Friday from 5 to 6, there's a peace vigil on the corner of Water Street and Ocean near the government building. And since the war ostensibly was declared over with, when Bush made his announcement, MacArthur-like, on the warship, there's been a downturn in the number of people there. And I would invite people not just concerned with the situation in the Middle East, but to... it's a good opportunity for people that are interested in the war against the poor and the vulnerable right here in this country, especially the homeless here in Santa Cruz and the street people and so on. And so it's a good opportunity for people to join us every Friday evening from 5 to 6.
So, John, were you there last Friday, day before yesterday?
Yes.
And how was the turnout?
Well, not too good, and it's been going down ever since the war ostensibly was declared over. And, of course, it isn't over by any means. American soldiers are getting killed every day, and I'm sure that the people there are also being killed, the civilians. And so the war isn't over. In fact, it seems to be picking up. And but I'm just saying that if people are involved with other activities of injustice, such as the harassment of the homeless here in Santa Cruz, and I just heard the gentleman talking before I was on, and so I think it's a good opportunity for people to join us on Friday evenings. I noticed one thing. It may be considered a minor thing, but I noticed there is a lot of selectivity in the harassment of people right here in Santa Cruz. I noticed a lot of yuppie types, middle class people, seem to not having much problems walking their dogs on Pacific Avenue, which, as far as I know, that ordinance against walking dogs hasn't been revoked, and yet, if people look a little down and out that have a dog with them, they're usually sometimes cited and told to get off Pacific Avenue.
Well, selective enforcement, of course, is the name of the game, and it's what the city council has been authorizing police to do for the last year and a half. Particularly, well, for, decades before that, too, as well, but it's become particularly prominent in the last year and a half under the Emily Riley, Ed Porter, downtown ordinance expansion crackdown, which essentially was kind of a cover-up for a lot of police harassment that happened last summer and became rather outrageously visible in the case of Norman Friedberg, who was, as you may remember, beaten down for resisting giving breadcrumbs to the pigeons ticket at a Food Not Bombs rally in front of, Food Not Bombs meal in front of the Cinema 9 at O'Neill's Surf Shop area. What you say is certainly true. I've seen it too. What the police will tell you is, well, these are new tourists and we warn them and then they take their dogs off them all, whereas these homeless people hang around all the time with their dogs and they've been repeatedly warned. And it is true that I've seen police officers warn homeless people with dogs, and of course the absurdity of the law is a part of the issue. But part of the issue is these laws serve as a structure for police state activity, which is to say, police making decisions independently of legislative and judicial authorities on their own. And the police can decide who to go after, and they do. And they've been doing this most recently not just with dog off a leash, it's dog at all on the mall on Pacific Avenue. Although ironically, you can have a duck or a cat or a pet skunk if you want. You know, I mean, you can't. It's a dog that they don't like. And they've been using it now against tablers, so that if you don't move your table, even if you're registering voters, even if you're a labor union with a display device outside a store that you're having a labor dispute with, if you stay there for more than an hour, according to the unconstitutional city law that was passed by Mike Rotkin and all these other city council members in January, you are subject to a $162 ticket for the first offense and up to $1,000 and 6 months in jail. Maybe it's a year in jail. I can never be clear about that. For the second offense. What's happened, however, is, as you, I think you pointed out, police simply enforce these laws against people that they choose to enforce them against.
Selective, I think. I don't know, to many people this would seem like a minor issue about pets, but I notice that constantly, and I just thought I'd mention that. And one thing else I wanted to mention, I just heard from a friend in North Carolina, where I go fairly frequently due to my wife being in a hospital there, and he sent me some newspapers from Asheville, and this seems to be a national trend, the harassment of people and peace protesters, and this is a paper from a couple of months ago when the war was starting, and they, at Asheville, considered a fairly progressive city in North Carolina. It has a lot of people from the north there, and it's kind of a vacation place and a retirement city. But they have a lot of people with different lifestyles, alternative lifestyles, and so on. But when it came to the peace protest, there was remarkable harassment of the protesters, and outright brutality of the part of the police. It was very shocking. I'm going to make a copy of what happened there, and I don't think Asheville is any exception to the rule. This has been going on all over the country.
The same thing was happening in Santa Cruz. They drove away the vigil against two wars here in Santa Cruz, which was, of course, the war against the poor and the war against Iraq, were both being protested by vigilers at Cooper and Pacific. Way back in, I guess, March, and the police used the move-along law for the first and only time, well, the first time at that point, against the vigilers. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which set up a table down the way, was ignored. They just went after the vigilers. Now they're going after all kinds of groups with this law.
Well, yes, treatment of dissidents and vulnerable people, such as homeless people, is getting worse. And I really think our country is turning into a police state. And I have a sign that where I mentioned the fact that we now have basically a corporate, theocratic, fascist state run by the... joining us Friday evenings, because we certainly don't want to these vigils to end. This is a constant struggle, and we need to remind the passersby that you know there are people here that are standing up against what's happening, not only in this country, not only in the world,
right,
but right here in the city of Santa Cruz. So I'm hoping some homeless people interested in the homeless activities here can join us.
Yeah, well, it would be nice if some of those peace protests joined those trying to fight discrimination against the homeless downtown as well. That, unfortunately, has happened very, very little. I haven't seen any of those peace protesters show up to support causes in terms of the civil rights of people locally, which is too bad. I support the peace protesters, and I'm pleased, and I am a peace protester. I've been to jail for it, and I'll go to jail again, but it's sad to see that people concerned about civil rights with Ashcroft don't give a shit about civil rights for Riley, or they don't give a shit enough to go down there and stop this fencing off of the Walnut Street planter, which is happening in front of the Pacific Trading Company, the harassment that panhandlers are suffering. Listen, John, thank you. I'm gonna roll on.
Okay, Robert. You have a good day.
You too, man. Yeah, and I don't want to spend a lot of energy, you know, castigating folks who are trying to do a good job, protesters, peace protesters, and people protesting other causes. I just, you know, I think it would be good if we could kind of get together on some of this stuff and recognize the culpability of local authorities and local police. I don't just think it's against the homeless. I think this is intended against a broader swath of the population, frankly. And I think that should concern everyone. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Tom.
My question is always, I'm also interested in On Down, and my question is always is what to do about it. I discovered something that may be of some interest. What do you know about grand juries?
Well, I actually ran into a grand juror last couple of years. We had a chat. He actually was outgoing, and he was giving me advice as to how to try to get information to the grand jury. I was concerned about violations of the Brown Act by the city council, which is the Open Meetings Act, which they've been regularly violating at different points, somewhat capriciously. I mean, well, actually quite capriciously. And, of course, violations by the police department. The grand jury locally, as I understand it, is a civil grand jury. It's not a criminal grand jury, although I'm not entirely up on the details of that. The current grand jury is currently being selected, and it should be chosen again. I think you can go offer your name to the judge, and he will then put you on ask you a series of questions, and then they compile the grand jury for a year. Grand jury's offices, for those who want better information, I admit my...
Who's they, Robert?
The judges choose the grand jury.
In other words, the fox guarding the chicken coop.
You got it. But if you want the specifics, the written specifics on the grand jury, you want to talk to the current grand jury secretary.
Well, let me
finish this.
Because,
Tom, before you finish.
What I discovered in the Constitution of the State of California, Article 1, Section 23, is that there is only one mention of grand juries, and it is the following. One or more grand juries shall be drawn and summoned at least once a year in each county. Now, since the grand jury, to the best of my understanding, the grand jury is the only instrument that the citizens have to ride herd on government that's out of control, and I think we can agree that government, local government, as well as all other kinds, is out of control. And now, I think that if that's the only provision made in the Constitution for the state of California, it seems to me that one direction, a possible direction to go, is to for the judges and the prosecuting attorneys and so on, for the system basically not to choose the grand jury. I've had encounters with grand juries in Mendocino and Marin, and also the grand jury here. And let me tell you, it ain't much of a grand jury, and certainly there's not even a pretense of them riding herd on the government.
Well, it depends, Tom. I mean, for example, the grand jury in San Francisco indicted the entire top of the police department, and then, of course, it got thrown out, unfortunately. I mean, you can have grand juries that have some impact, but I tend to agree with you, yeah.
Well, the matter of who selects them, it seems to me if they're selected by the judges, and how many things we can say against the judges, it seems to me why shouldn't we have a referendum, for instance,
mm-hmm.
Within the county, the kind of thing that was just, the sort of tax thing that was just voted on. I don't know much about it, but a referendum of some kind establishing who chooses the grand jury.
Right.
I mean, it seems to me that this is what we have to do. We cannot keep going on and facing up and standing up and all the rest of it to people who are sold out and who hold all the power.
Well,
unless we can, in some way, exert some kind of control, meaning some kind of being able to do them some harm for the harm that they do us. And if the grand jury is the only instrument I know of to do this,
Is the referendum. The processes that are already set up to do this, of course, are somewhat rigged, I imagine. I haven't studied the actual laws. I'm sure there are laws that have been passed.
Why can't we change them?
You can. You have two ways to change them. You can change them through the elaborate referendum process, and it may require a referendum at the an initiative at the state level. I don't know what the laws are. Maybe you can find out.
Hang on a second, Tom. Let me finish here.
Because I want to get this said. Tom, hang on. You're not on the air. I am at the moment. I'm the one who's on the air at the moment. You're still there, but I want to finish what I'm saying here.
Batting our heads against the wall.
To say the least. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that there are ways to... there are currently laws around how the grand jury is summoned. You could look into those laws, and you can also... you can also, of course, agitate for a change in those laws. So are you there, Tom?
The highest elected...
Hello?
Officer of the...
Tom? I don't know if he can actually hear me, and I have to be able to get a word in here. So, in any ways, he's got a lot of good things to say, but this has to be a dialogue. It can't just be... I do my monologues. You guys get to do the dialogue. I guess that's how it goes. And he isn't hearing anything I'm saying. So, I'm not sure what's going on here.
The electoral process.
Anyway, he's got a lot of good things to say, and I hope he gets more information about the grand jury and gets it to us. I was going to say that the grand jury is on the third floor of the county building. If you want to go talk to them directly about what their so-called processes are, I'm going to try to tune in on Tom here and give him a chance to kind of sum up, but I don't think he's hearing what I'm saying, and I don't think we can dialogue here.
What makes sense,
yes,
and what is perfectly legal.
Tom, can you hear me?
What?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah. The last minute of what you've been saying, I don't think has gotten through because I couldn't get through to you. I was trying to say something in response to what you were saying, and I was suggesting that you might do is if you want to encourage people to, let's say, it requires political organizing. You obviously got to get a lot of people involved in changing the process because that's what
I thought this program was a little bit about that.
It is. And you're raising that issue.
That's what I'm starting. I'm a lonely old guy in a wheelchair. I can't,
right.
not much connection to the community.
Right. Well.
So what I'm doing is proposing that some of the energy that we give to, to things that don't seem to work, that we might explore the possibility of making, for instance, making it impossible for people to say that an independent can't run, and choosing a commission, for instance, electing a commission to choose the grand jury every year or every 6 months or whatever's decided, whatever the people, think in our wisdom that it ought to be.
Right. I was saying before that the process for doing this is a lengthy, complicated, and expensive one, but it isn't necessary. Or you could use a revolutionary process, of course, which may be what we're stuck with as well. And if other people have ideas on this, they're invited to call in and talk about it as well.
Okay. Well, I think the effect is revolutionary. I mean, I think
sure. If you can get it done, sure.
Even if we do it in the existing forms, especially since we see an opportunity to do it, since the form is no better defined than this in the Constitution.
Well, the other opportunity is for people en masse to show up at the current grand jury and demand that issues be raised, call the media, and so forth. So you actually can use the existing grand jury system. In fact, you can use the existing grand jury system to demand a change in the grand jury system if you want.
Well, I mean, you could do that, but there's absolutely no reason why they, any more than the judges that choose them, have to listen to you.
Well, if you make enough noise, it's more likely. Your only other option is armed revolution or electoral changes, which are both rather expensive.
Changes. What's wrong with that?
Because it costs millions of dollars, Tom. That's the only problem.
The medical marijuana
electoral changes cost millions of dollars, or actually tens of thousands of dollars locally.
County, I don't think.
And
so,
when they also
enlist a lot of the people who have a very keen interest in this, the homeless.
I favor electoral changes, but it also requires extensive organizing and community work, and that's something I've been trying to do for a long time, and you know, like you, I call for changes, and hopefully somebody's going to be listening to us.
Well, this is a specific change.
Yeah, I call for specific changes, too.
Somebody, first of all, to write, you know, first of all, to write the resolution. I don't see any reason why that should be one person or, you know, why there couldn't be a committee chosen.
Right.
People are interested in doing
that. Obviously has to be a few people at the center who are interested in doing that.
What?
There have to be a few people at the center who are interested
That's
in doing
right.
that.
That's right. People who are interested in being effective instead of just beating their head against a wall, which is, just continues to be a wall.
And I think those who want to do that maybe should give you a call and
Absolutely.
Talk to you about it.
Absolutely. I'm perfectly willing to have them give me a call.
Okay.
454-9392 is my phone number.
One more time.
454-9392.
454-9392. For those interested in some direct and dramatic changes in the grand jury system as a way of dealing with real reform in the government system.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 1030 here at Free Radio. We're also broadcasting at www.freakradio.org. That's on the Internet. We are a streaming group. Snail mail here if you want to send us checks or written material. FRSC P.O. Box 7507. Santa Cruz, California, 95061. You can make checks payable to FRSC or Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can also give a call to get these numbers at 427-4523. 427-4523 is the voicemail of Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you can also leave a message there, a public service announcement if you got one you want put out on the air. If you got a question about the station, if you want to be part of the collective, if you want to get more information about the station. If you want more information about grand jury reform, you can give a call to Tom at 454-9392. I hope I got that number right there, Tom. Call me back if I didn't. And you can also call HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group that's fighting the anti-homeless laws and police abuse generally downtown, things like the sleeping ban as well, 423-HUF, 423-4833, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Call-in number here is 427-3772. Was Kill the Cop Inside, another just kidding number. You know, I'm kind of sad, too, to hear that the Peace Friday protests are dropping, though I haven't been to them for about a month and a half, as far as I remember. And I encourage people to go. I think I was at the downtown with a supporting, Joe Williams, Becky Johnson, others, on Friday at the third day of the Stop the Seizure of the Planter by the Pacific Trading Company, the redevelopment agency, and the city staff when they're essentially removing all the seating space in front of Costa Brava, the 30 places to sit without any public process. And while I was doing that, I was also talking about the war in Iraq and the war on the civil rights of people in Santa Cruz because, I mean, not only are you destroying the legislative process, you're destroying the right of people to be in public spaces if you remove seating for them. And if you do so, if you're removing seating with a deliberate attempt to target a particular class of people who are there, as this is, you know, just Chapter 7 in the latest struggle to do by the merchants and the redevelopment agency, the city staff, the hosts, and the police department, all of them, you know, working in concert behind closed doors without public process, without a city council vote on any of these issues. I encourage you to vote, to call the city council today because they can stop this, because it hasn't gone to city council, it hasn't had a vote, this business of removing all the seating area in front of the Costa Brava Pacific Trading Company on Pacific Avenue by moving, spending $7,200, according to Steve Hammack of the Parks and Rec Commission, Parks and Rec Department, Superintendent of Parks and Rec, and $7,200 to move a fence 4 inches so there's no place for people to sit where previously people have been able to sit. Albeit not necessarily in the most comfort, but still, if you try to sit on a planter that's closer to the ground, that is a crime, $162 crime, not because it hurts the planter, not because it hurts the plants, but again, because the same twisted merchant mentality, which is somehow we rule, and therefore our rules will govern the public spaces downtown, is what wrote those rules, and eliminated all the brick planters that used to be along Pacific Avenue and half of the benches, as well as eliminating the new leaf planter. So the number to call to stop this is 420-5020, and then you can choose a city council member, or if you want to call Mayor Riley directly, it's 420-5022. Apparently she promised a member of the public that she would at least speak to the city manager's office about it. The city manager's office, through Martin Bernal, assistant city manager, has said that he will stop the project or delay the project if he gets a call from one city council member saying that they want more information because they haven't had any formal conferences with the city council. And my attempt to get information about informal communications, written and otherwise, has yielded me only one document, 8 pages of complaints from the Pacific Trading Company, which apparently was encouraged by Julie Hendy, hired by the redevelopment agency to mastermind this gentrification effort, because that's really what's kind of pushing it, the notion of the redevelopment agency, that the city will be have a better tax base, be friendlier, get more money for projects, attract a better class of people if they do things like eliminate seating, make it harder for people to associate downtown who are poor and homeless, arrest chalkers and political activists at tables who, if they don't move every hour or if they chalk with erasable chalk on the sidewalk, and go after people for different and diverse reasons that actually are constitutionally protected, but that's being ignored here in Santa Cruz, as it's apparently happening across the country, and needs to be stopped. We got to fight it here, folks. That's where we fight it. We fight it in our communities. You know, I'm very glad that some people have impeached President Bush on their website. But if that same website or that same email is being used to support city council's decisions to criminalize people on the mall and expand police power, it's just blindness, hypocrisy, or I don't know what it is. It's something in that range. And the people that I'm talking about know who I'm talking about. And actually, I've been pretty open about it. I've gotten a recent email from individuals with the street performers, who is an occasional street performer himself, and Robert Nahas, he sent me a long email, which it's not that long actually, which he somehow feels that he supports removing the bench space apparently from the in front of the Pacific Trading Company, even though there's no public process, even though that criminalizes musicians, it criminalizes poor people, it makes it a completely forbidden zone for those who want to sit down, because if you try to sit on the sidewalk, even if you're out of the way, Mayor Riley and her cronies have made that illegal. They've expanded the no-sitting zones to 14 feet from all buildings and crosswalks and drinking fountains. And it's a real constriction of the right to use public spaces and should be stopped. 420-5022. 420-5022. Give them a call today. It's a voicemail system, so you can leave them a message. Tell them to call the city manager's office and hold up on the project until there's at least an opportunity to discuss, consider alternatives, talk to the people who are going to be affected by this, and things of that sort. Things the city staff doesn't want to do. They want the power to make all these decisions in their back chambers. That's what they want to do, just like with the permit parking process citywide. And we actually have a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday, which I haven't briefed myself on, but I'm going to try to kind of look it over. I'm going to be out of town for most of that day, so I don't even think I will necessarily be there. There's also on Tuesday, I want to remind you, a special forum, a special legal forum coming up on Fight Your Ticket. That's going to be happening at 5:30 at the second floor of the public library, the main library downtown, right across from City Hall, right across from the Sentinel on, I guess it's Church Street. And anybody's invited. It's free. You can, discuss and figure out how to fight your ticket. I may be playing today some of an earlier series of forums we did much earlier, 14 years ago, when we were fighting these same damn tickets. And I can understand why certain callers who call in and discuss, we got to try some new approaches because the old ones aren't working. Their frustration is a very real frustration. And it's not, Tom, who called in earlier, he had some very real concerns and some suggestions. And, all I can say is each of us tries to pursue this in his or her own way, and hopefully we can find some way to get together and do this in ways that work. Again, there's a legal forum, second floor of the library, 5:30 Tuesday, June 10th, and there's also a city council meeting, which I'll be discussing hopefully later in the show if I can get on the website in the appropriate place and check through it. So, the war is going on in Iraq, and a small band of protesters, bless them, are out there doing something about it. And some of the rest of us are occasionally raising our voices every couple of days. At least I say a few things on my show and sometimes on the streets. And I'll say something else. I'll do a little updating on the situation. Representative Farr, remember that's the guy who is your congressional representative here for this congressional district. If you look on his website, you find absolutely nothing new about the war. The last thing he's put on there is, I guess, a memorial to the soldiers on May 30th. Previous to that, there was a statement explaining why he voted against the military supplemental appropriation of $70 billion in April. Which it took a lot of protest to get him to do. He voted in favor of the military appropriation last fall. He voted in favor of reporting out the supplemental military appropriation in March, but he finally turned around, and I thank him for that, on this vote. But he has not called for the troops to get out of Iraq, which is what they need to do, so that we don't have, this endless scheming. The occupation of the Iraqi people is the obvious reason. They have no right to be there. It was an illegal war in the first place. And now, of course, they are simply targets. And the soldiers themselves are at risk, but they're oppressing people. British soldiers in the U.S. Were not treated too kindly in 1774 and 1775, and even in 1765. We have a similar situation over there. The soldiers are not greeted as liberators, and of course, the military authorities over there are not even proposing elections. They're not even proposing any kind of meaningful local control. It's all going to be in the hands of the U.S. It has to do with a small cabal at the center of the U.S. government is essentially expanding its power worldwide. This is what we're faced with, and we have to resist it. So that means U.S. out of Iraq. That's what that means, as well as no doubt a number of other places. And that means getting far off his comfortable Democratic butt to do something, because the only Democratic candidates who had anything significant about this is Kucinich, Dennis Kucinich, who actually is the only congressman that I know of, that has called for U.S. out of Iraq. Lee, I looked at her website this morning. She hasn't called for it in any speeches that I can see. Farr is completely silent on the issue, and Farr's office is on the same floor as that grand jury room. You want to go and find out what the grand jury is or isn't doing? Go check them out, and then go into Farr's office and give him and his staff an earful and bring a bunch of people with you. And, you know, suggest that he come to Santa Cruz and explain his position on this issue. You know, there was a very, very poorly attended town hall meeting, partially because Emily Riley endlessly postponed it, partially because people saw that city council doesn't respond to the concerns of the community by formulating into legislative form the resolutions that are suggested by the public, partially because the Representative Farr wasn't there. They sent flunkies, and they sent mouthpieces, and much as I like Rachel as a person, you know, I think she betrays her own principles by being around Farr in terms on this particular issue. I mean, she's a mouthpiece. She's a worker for that particular group, and that's how it is with her. We need to recognize these folks for who they are. We need to recognize the politicians for who they are, and we need to essentially encourage those in the community who are discouraged to stand up and recognize they can have an impact, and you can have an impact. And the main impact you have is coming together with each other. That's where the real changes happen. Farr was invited to speak on this show, and apparently he declined to do so. He is not on the list of supporters for Kucinich's recent resolution. I'm going to read that resolution now. The Kucinich resolution is, let's see here, I've got to spin down and find it. Saturday, June 7th, this Congressman Dennis J. Kucinich, Democrat of Ohio, today led 30 members of Congress in introducing a resolution of inquiry in the House of Representatives to force the administration to turn over the intelligence to back its yet unproven claims that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. I didn't see this in the paper this morning, but again, it looks like it was a Saturday resolution, I guess. A Saturday resolution? It's dated Saturday. Maybe it was a Friday resolution. Anyway, I haven't seen or heard anything about this on the media, interestingly enough, except on Kucinich's website. And I think I was brought to it by another website, which, if I remember it, I'll get it back to you. Anyway, it is long past time that the president and this administration show its evidence, stated Kucinich, the leader of the opposition to the war in Iraq in the House. Today we are introducing a resolution of inquiry to compel the White House to substantiate its claims. The president led the nation to war and spent at least $63 billion on that war on the basis of these unfounded assertions. The resolution introduced today by 30 members of Congress, led by Kucinich, seeks to force the administration to turn over the intelligence to substantiate claims by the President, Vice President, Secretary of Defense, and the White House Press Secretary that Iraq has chemical and biological weapons and therefore posed a threat to the United States. The resolution is a privileged resolution and must be voted on in committee within 14 legislative days. Kucinich used the same procedure in March to force the administration to release the 12,000-page weapon report that Iraq has submitted to the United Nations. Interesting, I didn't know that, and I haven't seen that weapons report. I guess I've heard about it, that it was censored with stuff, with the information where the U.S. supplied the weapons kind of cut out of the report. I don't have that evidence documentarily before me, but that's my anecdotal recollection of some of the newspaper stories from English and European papers of that time. This administration owes an explanation to this Congress and to the American people, continued Kucinich. Now is the time for truth-telling. Joining Kucinich on the resolution are Representatives S. Brown, J. Carson, Conyers, Cummings, Farr. I want to apologize. Farr apparently has joined the investigation resolution. Now all he has to do is join the U.S. out of Iraq resolution. We can stop investigating and start demanding, and I'll be considerably happier. But I'm glad to see he's joined on this resolution. Frank, Grijalva, Hinchy, Honda, Jackson Lee, Jackson Jr., Tubbs Jones, Kaptur, Lee, J. Lewis, Maloney, McDermott, George Miller, Nadler, Owens, Rahal, Schwarkowski, Serrano, Scott Stark, Van Hollen, Waters, Watson, and Woolsey. Those are the 30 Congress people that have joined the Kucinich resolution calling for an inquiry into the Bush administration's false assertions and a demand that they show us the beef, or in this case, the bullshit, the poison, the weapons of mass destruction, the evidence that supposedly led them to make these assessments to alarm and terrify the American people and the Congress and cow the Congress into voting this war of aggression against Iraq. Today at a Capitol Hall news conference, Congressman Dennis Kucinich, leader of the opposition, issued the following statement about his resolution of inquiry. This administration has made many assertions for which they have yet to produce any evidence about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. The president led the nation to war and spent at least $63 billion on that war on the basis of these unfounded assertions. We all know the unfounded claims the administration made to justify leading the country to war. Remember when on October 7, 2002, the president said in Cincinnati, Iraq possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons. It is seeking nuclear weapons, and surveillance photos reveal that the regime is rebuilding facilities that it had used to produce chemical and biological weapons. And on August 26, 2002, when the vice president said, simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. What he wants is time and more time to husband his resources to invest in his ongoing chemical and biological weapons program and to gain possession of nuclear weapons. And even this past March, the Secretary of Defense said on Face the Nation, we have seen intelligence over many months that they have chemical and biological weapons, and that they have dispersed them, and that they're weaponized, and that in one case at least, the command and control arrangements have been established. In fact, I have a list of claims that this administration has made over the past year about evidence they claimed they had of Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. But we all know that no weapons have been found. It has been 76 days since the start of the war, and no weapons have been found. So what evidence did this administration have to claim that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction? What evidence did this administration have for its repeated claims that Iraq was a threat to this nation? What evidence did this administration have to spend $63 billion in taxpayer money? What evidence did this administration have to justify war? We think it's high time that we see the evidence, if there is any evidence, for this administration's many unfounded assertions. That is why we intend to compel the White House to release its evidence through a resolution of inquiry that we will introduce tomorrow. And actually, this was a statement made the day before by Kucinich on the House floor. Or I'm not sure actually where he made it, but it was on his website. It's not too hard to get these websites, by the way, if you want to get on. I think it's .gov. No, it's not here. I don't want to give you the wrong website. We're just put in Kucinich website, and you would probably get it on a search engine. So Representative Farr has come out for the inquiry. Good for him. But let him now come out for U.S. out of Iraq. Because if you're not going to do that, what are you doing? You know, you're shuffling papers. I mean, I'm glad that he's getting the information, and I'm glad that's happening. But we need a strong demand like Kucinich's that the U.S. get out of that country and supposedly restore that liberated country to its own citizens, its own people. Gloomy thing I noticed was the Cities for Peace website, which is all the city councils around the country, which began with the Santa Cruz City Council. About a year and a half ago, that there be no preemptive war against Iraq without UN support. Actually, I don't have the actual resolution before me. But, of course, since then, the city council has backed off and refused to put forward any resolutions, and some of them just disappear. The Kennedy resolution, which was the pretext for delaying and not voting on the Porter resolution calling for the troops to come out of Iraq, has disappeared from the city council agendas. I requested Leslie, the city clerk, get it for me. First, she said it didn't exist. She didn't have it. Then she said she'd look for it and faxed me the wrong resolution. But I'm hoping I can get the right resolution, if not from her, then possibly, maybe underground through Iraqi intelligence. I'm going to look for it. Kennedy actually wrote a very good resolution. He's very good at civil rights and peace, war and peace issues far away from Santa Cruz. When it comes to local issues, he will be supporting the police department and supporting laws that criminalize the homeless. And that's the sad thing with Kennedy, who in essence is a hypocrite on this issue, fundamental hypocrite. Last time, on my Thursday show, I talked about, I've been talking about it a couple of the past shows, about the fuck the police issue. This is the issue of the man, John Moorer, downtown, who you may have seen sitting in front of the Palomar Hotel with a little sign and a cup. I think it's a container, actually, a large thing that said pennies, question mark, a large circular drum container, and some of his possessions. Spirit changing. He used to be a street spirit vendor. I think he still vends street spirit, and he got multiple tickets from the police department for a number of things. I wrote a long speech about it. You can read that speech on the internet at www.santacruz.indymedia.org, another good website, folks, for those of you who don't know it, www.santacruz, one word, small letters, .indy, indymedia.org. And he got his final ticket was a second ticket for profane and obscene language, or profane and abusive language while panhandling. And all he did was he had a little sign in his hat that said, fuck the pigs, parentheses, police, end parentheses. For those who don't know that police are pigs in his particular vocabulary and his particular estimation at that time. And the police arrested him. Well, they gave him a $1,000 citation, up to $1,000 and 6 months or a year in jail as a misdemeanor, because the second ticket, and that was their second ticket to him for that particular, quote, crime, unquote, well, it is a crime to use abusive language, I would think, if you're really abusing someone in a way that is inappropriate, but that's not what he was doing, according to his report, and according to my visual observation of that ticket, he had a sign in his hat which talked about his opinion of the police department, which is abusing nobody. It is expressing a view as to what on public policies in Santa Cruz. Anyway, I spoke about it at City Hall, and I've finally been able to get the tape, the videotape. Been some technical difficulties in making it available. The station, thank you, Skidmark Bob, and Vinny and other folks who've been operating on the station for getting the equipment set up again. I can now play the audio section of videotapes. I'm going to play that right now. That's the session at Oral Communications when I brought this issue to the City Council and to the community, I hoped, to raise the issue of what are the police doing censoring the First Amendment downtown, even if they don't like the message. That's not their job. And, of course, what I got was more censorship, this time not from the police, but from the City Council. I'm going to play this now, and you get to listen if you want.
According to Mr. Grinnell, things will start on June 6th, unless there is a specific action from a council member asking this matter be put on a public agenda or delayed. That's what I was told. So community members should call in if they're interested in stopping this. You know, it's too bad that the young people aren't here still to kind of hear some of the non-rah-rah side of the Santa Cruz City Council scene. Those going to Shinju or Shingu might be interested in asking their hosts whether they have a law against sleeping in public places when there's no shelter, whether they have a law against sitting down on the sidewalk of Santa Cruz, whether they have laws that criminalize people for peacefully asking for anything after dark.
And what I was referring to here, there was a large brouhaha made about youth delegations being sent to a sister city in Japan, Shinju, I think it was, where they were going to be, you know, ambassadors of goodwill and so forth. And Emily Riley read my speech about John Moorer's case, the fuck the police case, the harassment for a fuck the police sign. And she came up to me before the city council and said to me, I don't want you mentioning this at the mic in front of all those children. She said, you're not going to do that, are you? And I said, I don't know. You know, I mean, it seems to me to be a relevant issue. I can't promise you anything. And she said, well, I'll be turning off your mic if you do, because she wanted to protect the tender ears of the young ones. Well, by the time you hear me speaking at Oral Communications, there was nary a child in the room. There were actually only about 10 or 15 people in the room. So Riley, her original pretext for interfering with the public Oral Communications, and city council members and mayors don't need a pretext. They do this regularly anyway. But her original pretext was gone. I was referring in this particular part of the speech to the hypocrisy of sending these goodwill ambassadors abroad when you are engaging in hostility toward poor people and people of different economic class at home, which is what our city council does, on behalf of the merchants.
Of course, I don't know if they do, but I think these are productive questions. I'm going to be talking tonight about the latest outrageous example of police misconduct. I distributed a speech earlier that contained some of my remarks. The mayor came over to me before the meeting and asked me to delete certain words from my speech. She definitely has a right to her opinion. What she does not have a right to do is censor the content of speakers here at Oral Communication or order their removal unless they are actually disrupting the meeting. And I don't think words given in this fashion disrupt the meeting. Unfortunately, Santa Cruz mayors have not always done this, but rather allowed their own sensibilities other than the public's right to hear and to speak to shape their decisions. Additionally, Mayor Riley threatened to cut off my mic if I used a certain word. Day before yesterday, I saw a dangerous product of the imperious attitude that city council members have here in Santa Cruz, exemplified by what Mayor Riley did this evening, on the street downtown. This was a John Moore, a homeless man who was at one time a master vendor for Street Spirit, was cited twice for a small sign in his hat that read, "Fuck the pigs." That's what it said. I'm simply stating what was on the sign. I'm sorry, it is a factual fact. He faces $162 for the first citation and a possible $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail for the second. Aurora was sitting legally on the sidewalk and one of the small women areas left the poor and pulled in the bucket asking for pennies. He said nothing. I had on this t-shirt. But I didn't think it was strong enough. And in solidarity, I put on this t-shirt.
And at this point, I take off a t-shirt which says, "Warning or danger, police in area." And underneath it, there was another t-shirt which I was wearing, which could then be seen on the television camera and by the city council and by members of the audience. It said, "Fuck the police."
Which I don't normally wear.
Mr. Lawrence, I find your comments very disruptive to me. I find them against the rule of decorum in this chamber.
I have 30 seconds left, Mayor. If you want to make an issue of it, you certainly can, but 30 seconds doesn't seem much time because it's finished. There are no children here in the audience. We can proceed. This man was arrested for having these words on a hat.
You're welcome to continue speaking in 30 seconds.
Thank you. Can you turn on my mic again, please?
Yeah.
You won't turn
on. No, I can hear what you're saying.
Well,
I'm very happy to hear
what I'm saying, and there needs to be a public record of what I'm saying. That's allowed by the Brown Act. In fact, that's mandated by the Brown Act.
Your time is up, Mr. Lawrence. Thank you for your time.
I'm not finished. I have 20 seconds left to go. You said you were going to give me 30 seconds. I'm going to take my oral communications time. This is an example the public should know, and I hope you can hear me speaking loudly, of what the city council does when it doesn't want to hear an unpopular message.
Your time is up, Mr. Lawrence.
Completely inappropriate. And
anyone else like to address this evening? Next speaker, please. Thank you.
So, what you saw there, or what you heard there, actually, and it sounds quite audible, but that's because you're listening to the soundtrack of a videotape made by Becky Johnson, who was videoing from the side. I have no idea whether members of the television audience really got an opportunity to hear the issue I was raising, and obviously I was somewhat rattled. You hear me getting more and more anxious and running my words together and, you know, under some pressure. So the impact of an authority figure with the power to have you arrested or removed from the chamber interfering with your right to speak does have a powerful, chilling effect on what you're saying. And some will say, well, you know, you're being inflammatory, you use the word fuck, and you have a t-shirt, fuck the police. Well, first of all, I would say to you that the First Amendment is required for speech that is controversial or inflammatory. The non-inflammatory comments don't even need any kind of protection at all. No one's going to try to censor them. We need the protection for those kinds of speech that some people hate. It's just, you know, how it is. And I know there's a controversy at this radio station about what hate speech is. I heard it discussed the other day, and that's an interesting controversy too. But the issue here is, in this particular case, the words "fuck the police" were not used in the way that they would normally be used when you're shouting an expression of anger at the police or an expression of anger to the community about the police. This was a descriptive phrase which talked about an actual false arrest, in this case actually a false citation, but really a citation is an arrest. They can't issue a citation without probable cause. It's called a non-custodial arrest. You aren't